That's a
Is
wrap.
This is All Things Education, a podcast where three-decade teachers discuss what they know.
The good, the not so good, and the continuous opportunity for high-quality education in Texas.
Join us for a smart conversation as we dig deep into the issues that affect us all in and around our great state.
And here are those three eminent instructors now.
Hey, y'all.
Hey, everybody.
Hi there.
How's it going, guys? We are back to school. It is the mid-late August, and the kids are back. How are you feeling? How is the vibe on your campus right now?
It's wild. For me, it feels like in some ways I never left. The summer felt so short because it was short. But, you know, it's always great at the start of the year. I think there's a fresh energy. Everybody feels that sort of like clean slate, new start. When kids come back that maybe you're returning students, you know, it's neat to see them mature over the summer in the ways that they do and kind of come in with a new vibe themselves. And then, of course, the incoming sixth graders, since I'm on a middle school campus, they're always super bright eyed and excited, a little nervous, but it's cute. Everybody's happy to be back, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, nice.
Totally love that. And on my side of things, I'm teaching mostly ninth graders this year as a high school teacher. So they're bright eyed and they're bushy tailed, ready to go. They come in with their neat little stack of notebooks and freshly sharpened pencils, and they're ready to listen to everything that you have to say. And us three veterans here, we know that's going to last the whole year, right?
Yeah, right.
Just for sure.
Be ready for every lesson when the bell rings. Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, this is definitely my favorite time of the year. I love coming back to school. I love the energy. It's chaotic. It's fast paced. It's great to see the kids again. And it's great to see how they've changed, how they've grown up. And right now there's a really good energy on my campus, and I'm feeling great about things. My son is doing cross country, which does mean him and I are waking up at 5:30 in the morning.
Oh, that is rough.
We even as a morning are person. On campus at between 6 and 6:30. That's an adventure. But, you know, it's going really well for him. He loves it, so I'm really happy about that. And then I am teaching our school's very first advanced speech and debate course, and that's super interesting. That's going to be a lot, and I'm really excited for that. But on my campus, there is a lot of change going on, and we have more new hires than pretty much ever before. And we have four new leaders, a new principal and three brand new assistant principals. So there's a lot of change going on right now, which is happening all across Texas.
Yeah, totally. And change is inevitable, right? And so I want to snag hold of that energy, Matthew, that you said about back to school. I think I talk to a lot of teachers, and I'm sure y'all do as well, that have a doom and gloom about back to school. They've got their countdown already on the board to winter break. Or maybe even Halloween break. I don't know. That's not even a thing. But we're doing what we love, and it's really exciting. So we want to grab hold of that energy while also acknowledging that there are some problems that come with change. Maybe it's a new administration, like Matthew talked about, or maybe it's a lot more granular. In my case, two doors down from me, there's a teacher that didn't come on the first day of school for a personal reason. And so there we've kind of had to hodgepodge some long-term sub approaches in there. And already we're seeing perhaps some lost instruction, which is something that we're going to have to address at our school. So it's macro and it's micro, right, Natalie?
Absolutely. I mean, the interesting thing, I think the challenge for all of us in the industry is to look at those situations as points of data for us and how we operate in our systems of education, but also as opportunities. How do we turn that into a win? Because we can identify, like you said, the instructional impact on students early on and try to capture that and turn it into an opportunity to make gains. And I guess maybe our conversation today will be looking at how we do that.
Yeah, exactly. And so for today's topic or theme or what we want to talk about is, giving some advice to those who are new to the teaching profession. And before we get into that, I just want to go over a few pretty stark data points in Texas in terms of new hires. So it should be no surprise to anyone that there is still a teacher shortage crisis in Texas and across the nation. Simply put, there are not enough teachers currently to fill all of the vacancies. And this is a trend in our state that's been going on since about 2012, where the amount of vacancies has been greater than the amount of teachers. But it was really exacerbated, of course, during COVID and shortly after. And so about 850,000 teachers have left the teaching profession since 2021 in our state. It's important to know that we have about 40% of teachers right now who are within their first 3 years of teaching in Texas. Between about 10 and 14% are new hires this year. And there's a much greater chance of teachers leaving the profession within their first 5 years than afterwards. About 50% of teachers leave the teaching profession within their first 5 years. And what do you guys think of these numbers?
It's pretty compelling data. I mean, it creates a big question of like all the caveats that are contributing to those points of data, like why are the teachers leaving? But, there's a lot that we could talk about in terms of policy around those issues and some things that are being put in place to try to better prepare teachers for their experience in the classroom. But I love that we have an opportunity through this podcast to talk about both the policy side and also what's actually happening on the campuses in the classrooms and what we can do to support people that are new and maybe people that are, seasoned in the profession, but they're dealing with new clientele every year. So how do we adapt to that change?
Yep.
100%. And I just want to echo what you both are saying, Natalie, that word opportunity, that's such an important one because we want to be solutions oriented. On this particular episode, we are not here to talk about any of the macro factors that are perhaps impelling teachers to leave the classroom. We also are probably going to leave on the side the teacher vacancy task force that was appointed by Governor Abbott a few years ago and made their recommendations in 2023 about how we can attract teachers back to the profession or to the profession in the first place. Rather, maybe today we want to highlight what this reality looks like for teachers and also your kids, our listeners who might have a new teacher in one or multiple of their classrooms and what that might mean for all involved. So that's kind of our goals today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a ton to unpack here, but today let's just keep it back to school and what advice we can give to those who are just starting out in this profession, right? I think we all remember what it was like to be new to teaching and the struggles, the challenges, the late nights, the working over the weekend, the lesson planning, the pulling your hair out of your head, all of the stress and how is it possible to do this profession? How am I going to make a go of this, right? What are some of the things that we've learned over the many years of teaching that we can bestow on our listeners today? And for me, I want to start this conversation around, I think, arguably the most challenging obstacle that new teachers face, and that is management, the big M, classroom management. How do you manage, whether you're an elementary school teacher, a middle school teacher, a high school teacher, it's all, unique and different, but how do you manage a class?
You know, I think there's a big how do you do it question mark around this. And there are strategies out the wazoo, right, that we learn about in our preparation programs. But when you're actually in the classroom, and for all of us at the secondary level where we have rotating groups of students and we're not with the same kids all day long, you know, that presents a different kind of consideration around what does classroom management look like. The best way that I could put it into words for new teachers or for teachers who are having a difficult time, even well into their career, you know, because there are people that struggle with this 10 years in. And I think the best piece of advice that I could give is to really sort of give yourself an opportunity in the beginning when you introduce a new group of kids to your space and kind of evaluate them for a period of time. Those first few days are huge feedback, like real time data days where you can see how the kids are interacting with each other, what they're mm-hmm. compelled to do in the space. And then you develop your procedures around that, like anticipating what kids are going to do as they come in the room. So when I was, for example, in the art studio for several years of my classroom instructional years, I had to think about all of those supplies and materials and things that are out and tempting to kids. And how do I make sure that they use the things that they're supposed to in the way that they're supposed to and not going straight for all the things that they shouldn't be touching just yet. And so, I mean, right off the bat, you know, you have to be creative in how am I going to coach this process and procedure of entering my room and keeping your hands to yourself when there's all this stimulus around you and it's so exciting and fun. And I don't think there's a one way to do that. I think it comes down to that group of kids and what works for them. And so, you know, you can try all the things that they suggest, standing at the door, managing the entry, you know, assigning seats, changing seating charts ever so often, et cetera. But at the end of the day, like, it's really about what works, what makes sense for this group at this time of the day and in this learning environment.
Awesome. I love that. That's beautiful. And so would you find that you had different procedures for different classes?
Sometimes. I mean, there were some things that were universal because it just worked in the art studio.
Right.
But there are some classes where, you know, the personalities of the kids are dynamic. And so the procedures sort of have to mold to fit, you know, and work for all of those kids.
And Natalie, could you remind our listeners what grade levels you taught?
Yeah, my first 3 years I taught high school English, and then I taught for 6 years in middle school art.
And did you find that the procedures were radically different for high school versus middle school?
In some ways, I think middle schoolers tend to be a little bit more squirrely.
Yeah.
So, you know, you do have to account for that in their personalities. But also, you know, it is... I think people in general, even adults, we all crave the structure of a routine. And yeah. So I think it's very, actually kids especially are very easily coached into those procedures. It's just a matter of, and even when you have to change them, right? Like that can be a daunting thing because you're like, oh, I got everybody used to walking in and picking up this material right by the door. And now I'm about to change it up and move it to another area of the room. But it really isn't hard to retrain kids in those processes and procedures. I think the biggest key is being consistent in your modeling of it. And you'd be surprised how quickly people take to that. Because how many times do we walk into like a new office building or a new, you know, whatever we have to go do as an adult? The first thing that we do when we walk in the door is we're looking around for some kind of signage that points us where to start, right?
Give right.
this line, take out this paper, whatever. And kids are the same way.
Right. So. Yeah, I kind of want to go off of that because I could not agree with you more. When I started off teaching, I remember my first year, I didn't quite understand how much kids wanted structure. Because it doesn't seem, based on their sort of like reactions or what they're doing or what they're saying, that they want it, right? They you think, oh, they just want to have fun. They just want to sort of like be chaotic. They're wild. They're squirrely, this, that, and the other thing. But I think it's really important to understand, especially as a new teacher, that not only do kids need structure, they actually appreciate it, right? Mm-hmm. It might come off as, oh, there are all these rules, right? And we assume that kids don't like rules because, you know, they complain about them or whatever. But I think they actually really do want those rules and those structures. And so I think, like, if you're teaching procedures, you're teaching your class culture, you're going through the steps at the beginning of the year in August and September, and you're repeating them, and you're repeating them, and you're repeating them, right? And you see, like, this reaction from the kids of, like, groaning or moaning or complaining or whatnot. Ride past that. Get through that, right? Because come October, come November, those routines that you've practiced, that you've done over and over and over again, are going to become second nature to them. You're no longer going to need to teach them. You're no longer going to need to reteach them. And they just become a habit. And so I really encourage new teachers to spend the time at the beginning of the year really mastering these seemingly trivial at times procedures, so that later on, it's second nature and the habit's established, and then you get into the, you know, get deep into the curriculum and the projects and, you know, the pedagogy and so forth. But take the time to really lock those in place.
Yeah, totally. And as teachers, we have any number of cliches at our ready disposal to bandy about when we talk about these things. Y'all, have you ever heard, be the thermostat, not the thermometer? That's a classic one we have in the profession, because we set the tone or the temperature in the room, right? We don't respond to it. We don't let the students do it. Have y'all heard, it's always easier to lighten up than it is to tighten up over the course of the year?
Yes, of course. Yep.
It's a classic, right?
Yep.
With the idea being that routines early are going to be a lot easier to establish than routines late if things go awry. But that being said, cliches kind of rise up in the lexicon because of some validity that's underneath. And let's not forget, something I want to tie on here to what Matthew was talking about is that not only the reason why kids crave these procedures is because their brains are still developing, right? No matter if you teach seniors in high school or even college age kids all the way down to early childhood instruction, their brains are still developing. Our brains develop all the way into our 20s. I mean, honestly, I'm in my 30s and I assume mine is still developing because I make mistakes all the time. And so we have to respond to that. And as beautiful and as rewarding as it is to see the differences, as we hinted at in the intro, between how much an 11th grader has grown versus when you knew them in ninth grader, that doesn't happen automatically, right? That happens because we guide them. We just had at my campus a formal PLC meeting, that's professional learning community meeting, just among ninth grade teachers last Wednesday, to talk about and codify some of these skills that we really want to develop in our ninth graders this year. And our big three was self-management and self-advocacy, skills that are not inherent or natural for all teenagers or preteens. Number two, organization skills, how to study, those type of things. And then also more like the third one being a socialization, you know, how a kid can make friends, how a kid can feel a sense of belonging. These are intentional decisions that our team and our school are going to prioritize to help kids develop, not just in ninth grade, but beyond.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit, now that we're on this topic of classroom management. I think one of the big questions new teachers have is, how strict am I supposed to be, right? How do I earn the respect of the class? Because I think a big struggle, at least certainly for me, when I was starting out in the profession, was I just felt like at times I didn't have the respect of the students that a lot of the other teachers who had more experience around me had. And I didn't know why. So any advice on that?
No, there's no one size fits all, panacea here. Any advice I give is what's working for me and may not work for you. But that being said, I do have a North Star, and it's, you called management the big M. For me, I have the big R, which is relationships, right? Yeah. And this is something that has just been so core to my instruction in three or four different schools that I've taught at in the last 16 years. That is what's going to lead me to be successful, which is relationships with those students that are in my room. Without that, there is no math instruction, right? Without that, there is no working on those skills that I talked about in the previous section. And relationships, as with your friends or with your family or acquaintances or your coworkers, they're not the same from person to person. And now apply that to a classroom full of, in my case, up to 28 students. It just has to be a priority, and it has to be intentional.
Yeah, I think relationships is a buzzword that we hear all throughout our careers, and it is reiterated for a reason every year because it is so fundamental to students' educational experiences, right? Think about what motivates anybody to do anything. Either it's intrinsic because it's valuable to you, and so I'm going to access this learning regardless of whether I have a relationship with my teacher or not. Or it's, I really like this teacher. The class is really fun. They make learning exciting. And so I want to show up and absorb the information for that reason. Now, in this stage, when students in middle schools and high schools and even elementary schools are still in that process of brain development, like y'all were talking about earlier, there are many children who are intrinsically motivated already, but I think that the vast majority of students at this point in their lives rely very much on being drawn in. And so the teacher's ability to establish and build those relationships is really crucial to student success even and their achievement. And I just wanted to kind of give that overview because I know probably for a lot of the people, a lot of the classroom teachers listening, they hear that word and I'm sure that it's kind of like, here we go again. We keep hearing about it. But the question is, how do I do it, right?
Right.
And so I agree with both of you that there isn't one size fits all in that process. I think that as a teacher, maybe a good point of start is to evaluate what feels like respect to me in my classroom and how do I establish procedures in a way that instills that in my students in this space, even if it's different from where they came from and where they're going next. And so, for some teachers, that could mean coming in an orderly fashion, having your stuff on the desk before the bell rings, out ready to learn. For another teacher, it could mean standing at the door and greeting every student with their choice of a high five or a fist bump. It could be, for me, it was a communication piece. You know, I always saw my kids as humans and tried my best to be empathetic to where they're at in life and what they're going through and what they're coming in the door with that isn't just focused on my particular content area. And I think in reading them and just simply asking, you know, how are you today? What's going on in your life? Having those kinds of conversations, establish some respect so that when it was time to talk about the content in the curriculum, I had their attention because I had already given them mine on a personal level.
And one of our other cliches is respect is a two-way street, right? Like, I think some teachers, they want to command that respect inherently from their pulpit. You know, the power dynamic exists in their classroom because they say so. But as Natalie was saying so eloquently just now, the respect has to be given before it can be demanded to be received. So I love that, Natalie.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is so awesome, y'all. Really good feedback. really good advice there. And I would also like to add that for me, the relationship building really began to click when I started to be my authentic self in the classroom, where I brought my true personality to the class. And everybody is different, right? Every teacher is going to have a different personality. But, and I think that there is an acting component to teaching, or at least one that's helped me. But I am who I am as a person when I'm in front of these kids. And they, over the course of the year, they come to know me as my true self. And I think that authenticity, they read that, they know that this is the true version of myself. And I think they appreciate that. I'd also like to add that I have, you know, over for a long time, really made an effort in August, September, October to really get to know my students on a personal level and their own individual interests, outside of school and in school, and to sort of try to tap into that, you know, to get them to see their greatest potential, their strengths, their interests, and how that can sort of connect with what you're teaching them is really powerful, I think, when it comes to building relationships and connections.
Agree.
Yeah, and can I just add one thing to that too?
Yeah.
That can easily be looked at cynically. I read a really excellent book that I want to just drop here, Culturally Responsive Teaching and the Brain, which kind of explores how you do these things as a teacher. The author, Zaretta Hammond, from about 10 years ago. And she said, one great strategy that you can do that's really tangible is have on your roster, instead of just here are the grades that these kids have this week, literally a box that says, did you have a one-on-one conversation with that kid this week? And what did you learn? So that you can be citing it. And that's something that I've been really good at when I was younger, but as I get a little bit older and my brain develops, or, you know, whatever the opposite of develops is, those type of very intentional strategies make sure that you're reaching all the kids, not just the ones that like talking to you or outgoing or extroverted, but the ones that have something to say as well, but maybe aren't coming to you.
And that, and I couldn't agree more. And I think that you'll see that has a big impact on just the class, the whole class vibe, energy, enthusiasm. Even though those quieter kids, the ones who aren't shouting out the answer, the ones who aren't coming up to you and asking you questions, even building relationships with them is going to, not only is it the right thing to do as a teacher, but it's also going to have a greater impact on the class as a whole and your effectiveness as a teacher overall. Another really overwhelming part of being a new teacher is, of course, the curriculum, what you're teaching. So let's talk a little bit about advice when it comes to learning a new curriculum, familiarizing yourself with a new curriculum, and thriving in that regard as a new teacher. Any advice?
I think, well, you know, a couple of episodes we talked about high quality instructional materials and the state's resource with regard to that. I don't know about y'all's districts, but I know that at my district this year on my campus in particular, one of our collective commitments as a whole faculty PLC and in our individual content PLCs is to really intentionally leverage some of the district resources as a baseline for that instructional quality. Because, you know, as we were talking about in that previous episode, I think especially for new teachers who are just coming in and trying to wrap their mind around the how I'm going to run this thing, you know, this is a great opportunity for them to really rely on some of the learnings and experiences of those that came before them, who have put together, pieced together some of those curricular resources and make that aspect of it a little bit easier, because then as you have established those, procedures and routines and classroom management pieces in terms of the how kids are accessing the learning in your space, then you can turn your focus more to the what, and refining and fine tuning that as you go, you know, through your career and making it better and making it applicable to each new group of kids. So I think really leveraging district resources, if you have them, campus resources, some of those being, some of the veteran teachers around you that have some incredible instructional materials. And I think for the most part, teachers are willing to share that resource with others, just so that we can help each other thrive in our purpose there, in terms of, getting kids excited about learning and then delivering that content. The curricular stuff, I think, for a new teacher is, something that is gifted to you in the beginning, if you're lucky and you have a lot to lean on with, your professional environment there. And then, it's one of those things that you just kind of trust yourself to grow and get better and learn as you're teaching the kids too.
Yeah, this is a really critical aspect of teaching, the lesson planning, right? The access to high quality resources. It also is like why, Matthew, when you cited that statistic about the percentage of teachers who leave within 5 years, that's one of the ones I find most troubling, because no matter what industry that you work in, inherently, you're not giving the best version of yourself in those first 5 years, and you eventually will give the better version just from experience. That's kind of a no-brainer. But that being said, it does blend with our previous episode, as Natalie said, where when we talked to Ben Mackey about high quality instructional materials, I think some of those solutions are coming. In my first year of teaching, I didn't create a single worksheet. I didn't create a single PowerPoint, a single lesson, because I was swimming upstream the whole year. And now I can't even imagine putting out a single student-facing lesson resource that I didn't create or at least refine myself. But that's 15 years in the interim that has led me to that process. To get even really specific, on Friday, I quote unquote lost an hour because I didn't like what I was teaching next week, and I scrapped it and I started fresh and tried to make it better. And those are the things I feel really comfortable to do now. But for our newer teachers, use what came before, whether the district is providing it to you in a formal way through this HQIM initiative, or whether, as Natalie said, you have those amazing colleagues that will give you a flash drive in August with some materials, or whether you're going out and seeking it on your own from a external source like Teachers Pay Teachers or something like that. Use it, but make it your own. I really feel like that's kind of the key secret sauce.
Yeah, I think that goes along with the cliche, don't work smarter, not harder. Right?
Great cliche.
Yeah. I think that's very true. If somebody is giving you access to these resources, use them, especially in your first year. Don't worry so much, I guess, about reinventing the wheel here. Take advantage of the resources that you're given, and just know that by year 3, 4, 5, you're going to have more time to refine, edit, modify, personalize those lessons. I would also advise any new teacher to start having your lunch with veteran teachers, preferably those who are teaching the same subject as you. Ask them about this lesson. I looked over what we're doing for next week. Here are some questions I had about this, or what kind of modifications do you think are you planning to make to these lessons? Don't be embarrassed or nervous about asking questions your first few years, because you're going to need that advice. And there are lots of great veteran teachers who are willing and able to share that information with you. I would also just like to add that now there is there are a lot of great AI tools out there for teachers, and this is going to continue to be the case. But if you find yourself needing to create a PowerPoint presentation, SlidesGo.com is a really good tool. If you need to create presentations or worksheets or lesson plans, ChatGPT does a really good job, even the free version. Microsoft Copilot is really good. Google Gemini is something that I use to make videos. Driftit is a really good tool for sub plans. There's Magic School. I haven't used it that much, but it has some really amazing resources in general and some really cool SEL stuff. Brisk is a tool that I'm excited about using this year for making presentations. And then I've been told that Suno, Suno, is a really fun tool for making songs. So those are just a few of the AI tools that I'm starting to familiarize myself with. And I'd advise anyone to, try those out. A lot of them, most of them right now are free. I think all the ones that I mentioned there are free. Take advantage of that. Don't reinvent the wheel, though. Yeah.
Yeah, those are great suggestions. I admittedly am not terribly familiar with AI in education in terms of using it for our professional practice, but I know that that's been coming down the pipeline just as with every other industry in the world right now. And I'm curious, we could probably devote a whole episode to talking about AI in education and how people are using it and what the general consensus is on that application and how kids are using it too, right? Those are important things to be on the lookout for.
I will say this about the AI tools that that I used last year and planning to use this year is that pretty much all of them, it does a lot of the work for you, but it doesn't do everything, of course. So if you're in a pinch, if you're, I've got to get this out in 45 minutes, just know that you're going to probably have to make a few tweaks to whatever is generated for you.
That's really good. I'm taking some really awesome notes here because, like Natalie, I haven't really used a lot of AI, but I want to. And just kind of to add on to the mentorship piece, Matthew, thank you for mentoring us on this topic here. But just if we do happen to have any veteran teachers listening, don't wait for those new ones to come to you. And something I'm really going to charge myself with when I leave this conversation is I really need to go and help that long-term sub this week, two doors down from me. And I think that's something that I need to be more intentional about, just like we are intentional with our student relationships. So thanks for that, y'all.
I want to ask you one more question, the two of you. In the spirit of back to school and in the spirit of helping out our new teachers, what was one aha moment that you had early on in your teaching career that really made a big impact? We've been teaching, the three of us have been in education for a long time now. There's a reason why we're in education. We've been in education for a long time now. But for me, it couldn't have happened without a few of these aha moments, I think. And so if you could just share out a little story.
I don't know if I have a specific story, but I do want to point to what I think could be one of the greatest strengths that an educator can develop, and that is humility. And one of you touched on it a minute ago. You were saying, don't be afraid to ask questions, don't be afraid to ask for help. And in the same vein of not, waiting to be asked and going, I think just having a sense of humility and seeing the craft and career of being an educator as an opportunity for you to continuously learn and grow as well, is probably key to an educator's success, both in terms of like how their students are performing academically under their instruction, but also in the fulfillment that they feel every day going home from their career. There's nothing that I think kills an educator's spirit and trajectory in their career than deciding that there's nothing more for them to learn. There's nothing anyone else can teach me. There's nothing that I can do better or differently than I've done for now. And I think that comes from the desire to seek comfort and consistency and routine in our careers, but it's actually the thing that can hold us back as educators and really prevent our students from achieving as much as they can. So the aha moment for me was when I realized that as an educator, and also as I observe some of that in the educators that I work with, you know, day in and day out on my campus, I think the people who thrive in this career and the kids that are thriving under them are the ones who go in with a sense of humility and the desire to continue to learn and grow and get better for the sake of their kids and for themselves.
Humility, such a great word. One that we'll learn whether we intend to or not over the course of our careers. And I'm going to put another groaner out here, another cliche groaner, but maybe you've heard a teacher say, the students teach us as much as we teach them. I heard a collective eye roll, maybe from the entire state of Texas on that one. But there's some truth to that one as well. My aha moment coming early in my career when I realized that as a teacher, the role is not just as a purveyor of information that I possess and that they lack, not whether it's math or any sort of life advice, but merely as a facilitator for the growth of their studies, of their development as a human, of the exploration of their identity, and all of the beautiful things that that comes along with. That's my aha moment, is listen to your students.
Oh, wow. All right.
That's sorry.
to mine. Mine, one of many, came in my first year. I'll never forget the student. I had this one student in ELA class that I was teaching, and she was very challenging. And she came off as being very disrespectful. And I was trying everything I could to get her to complete her work. She was really bright, very bright student, very capable student, but very challenging in a lot of ways. And we struggled. It was very combative. And at one point, probably about halfway through the year, I just stopped with, you know, I was tutoring her, but I stopped with our lesson, and we just spent about 30 minutes just talking about her, just talking about what she liked to do. And I found out so much in those 30 minutes where we put away the work, we put away sort of like this teacher student role relationship, and we just talked about life. And I found out all these cool things that she was into. And from that point on, I was able to build a really strong relationship with her. This doesn't mean that she was any easier as a student. This doesn't mean there were a lot of moments where it felt like pulling teeth, but she saw me in a little bit of a different light, and I certainly saw her in a different light. And I came to a better understanding of where she was coming from at her young age. And I think I was able to be a more effective teacher in the end because of that. And so I really sort of like want to end it with this idea that it really is first and foremost about the relationships that you build with your students. And so it's August right now. We'll air this in September. It's the beginning of a new school year. And I just want to wish all of those new and veteran teachers the very best of luck out there enjoy the year, have fun with your students, and let's rock and roll, y'all.
Love it.
Wishing everybody great things for this school year.
Thank you for listening to All Things Education.
Be sure to leave us a review and share the show with everyone you know.
If you liked what you heard, stay tuned for more compelling conversations with Natalie, Matthew, and Lance.
Until next time, Texas.